from the Star Rentals Sports Desk. Your Sports Radio KJR 950 AM and 93.3 FM Sports
Headlines. Here we go, boys and girls. Softy and Dick without Dick hanging out until 4:30 tonight. Headlines on this glorious Monday afternoon are brought to you by our friends at VenueKings.com.
Pit of stupidity.
You saw the Mariners announced today. Opening day is sold out. Not at VenueKings.com. Aha. $23 gets you in the door at VenueKings.com for next Friday night. $13 on Saturday. $11 on Sunday. Sold out at the box office, but not at VenueKings.com. You want to go watch Julio Rodriguez make his home debut against the Astros, then jump on VenueKings.com. That is the big news of the day. Unless you've been walking around with your head up your backside, Julio Rodriguez has made the opening day roster. The Mariners also will keep three catchers, Luis Torrens, Kyle Rowley, and Tom Murphy, at least for now, on the opening day roster. And remember, the opening day roster is extended through the 1st of May because of the COVID shutdown, the lockout, all that stuff. April 15th is also Jackie Robinson Day. You know, all players going to wear number 42, but there's a twist this year. Every player, regardless of team and the team colors, will wear 42 in Dodger blue next Friday on April the 15th around baseball. We have a trade to report in the NFL. The Saints and Eagles. The Saints getting two first-round draft picks from Philadelphia, 16 and 19 overall, plus a 22 sixth-rounder. The Eagles picking up number 18 in the first round this year, a 23 first-round pick, a 24 second-round pick, and a 22 third-round pick, plus a seventh-rounder. That is a lot. NBA news. Nets head coach Steve Nash says Ben Simmons, who has yet to play since the trade from Philadelphia, won't make his debut until the regular season is over. If he plays at all, it'll be in the postseason. Ben dealing with a bad back. And more news in the NFL. Patriots picking up wide receiver Devontae Parker, plus a 22 fifth-rounder from Miami for a 23 third-round pick. And Frank Gore announcing yesterday he plans to sign a one-day deal and retire as a 49er.
And here we go.
And now, two goofy, wacko, out-of-touch homers.
Just brutal radio. Just horrible.
Live. 41 yards.
From Elliott Bay.
Can you feel it now?
This is Softy and Dick.
There it is. The first official decision by the Pit of Stupidity Board was on Friday. If you didn't hear the show.
Pit of Stupidity.
First of all, shame on you. I mean, what the hell else would you be doing on a Friday afternoon besides tuning into us as we were live from UW and had a chance to talk to Kalen DeBoer, Jamarcus Shepherd, and Noke Brechterfield, all from UW? And it came up in the midday show with Kevin Shockey and Ian Furness that the voice of Russell Wilson was still in the open. This clip right here.
Hey, Seattle.
And the first official decision by the POS board was whether or not to remove his voice. You may have noticed it's now been taken out. So good work by you. Incredible editing job there, by the way, by you.
Sounded better than I thought it would.
Everybody sits around and wonders why we pay you the money we pay you. Well, there's example one frickin' A, baby, right there. Why Jackson Feltz makes the money he makes, because he is a editing wizard. So Russell Wilson no longer in the open. That's the first time, and that open's been running on the air for, what, 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, we started that one, I think, in late 19, I want to say.
Damn time, and all it takes is a guy turning his back on a city for the POS board to say the hell with you, you're out of here. So there's no more in the open. We can do, maybe later on we'll do a little contest to decide what should replace it. Maybe it should be Pete Carroll Frosty.
I feel sorry for you, Frosty.
Maybe it should be the Pit of Stupidity. Maybe it should be Chuck Powell describing all the Jerry DePoto haters out there.
I like Jerry's plan. Let's just get middle relievers. Middle relievers, that's going to win the championship.
I mean, there's a lot of opportunities out there, so we'll vote on that later on. But I think we actually should get a hold of the board today, Jackson.
Oh?
To be totally honest with you, and get their thoughts on the story of the day, because, as you know, there is some breaking news on this Monday afternoon to report to all of Mariner Nation, despite the description of him by now former Mariner president Kevin Mather. Julio Rodriguez, who I can vouch speaks just fine, by the way, has made the opening day roster and will be in center field on Thursday afternoon when the Mariners travel to Minnesota. And we'll be in center field, at least I think, when the M's come home next Friday against the Astros. I mean, can you imagine the Mariners have the opening day game, opening the home opener next Friday, and decide, you know what? The guys played 8 games in a row. We're going to go ahead and give them the night off on Friday, next Friday, when the Mariners have a damn sellout in front of 47,000 stinking people. But we should get the decision from the board to kind of follow up on the poll that we put out today on Softy KJR on Twitter.
No one likes a big poll more than Softy.
Is the Julio Rodriguez hype train out of control? Because let's face it, it is out of control, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I got people tweeting me. I hear people on this radio station all over the social media sphere. How many Hall of Fame how many MVPs is the guy going to win? Is he going to be a first or a second ballot Hall of Famer? How many home run titles will the guy win? How many All-Star games will the guy play in? How many times is he going to lead the league in OPS or wins above replacement or blah, blah, blah? How many gold gloves does he get? It's out of control, and here's why it's out of control. You know why it's out of control?
Why?
Ask me why, Softy.
Why?
Say it. Say it.
Why
say it.
Is it out of control?
Because of Twitter. That's why.
Because of Twitter. Just because of Twitter?
When Alex Rodriguez made his debut and when Ken Griffey Jr. made his debut, there was no such thing as Twitter. There was no Instacart. There was no Instagram. There was no FaceSnap or InstaFart, whatever the hell you call it these days. None of those things existed. So, dude, I'm telling you, back in the day when A-Rod got drafted out of Miami, and he made his debut. And Alex Rodriguez actually was waiting. You may not know this. The famous double game with Edgar Martinez.
Yeah.
You know who was on deck?
Yeah, it was
A-Rod.
Yeah.
As you watch the winning run come across, Alex Rodriguez was standing there. He was freaking on deck. I mean, he could have been the hero.
Man.
If Edgar Martinez walks and the bases are loaded, Alex Rodriguez could have been the hero. Can you imagine stomaching that now?
No.
Thank God it was
never.
Edgar Martinez and not him. But there was no such thing as social media back then. I'm sure, and I'm certain of it. I am certain of it. Okay? As much as this pain in my lower back won't go away, I am certain that everybody was fired up for Alex Rodriguez. The question is, you didn't know about it because you didn't hear about it on Twitter and Facebook. I remember going to a game in the late 94 season, maybe it was, or maybe it was 93, whatever, after he was drafted because the 94 season got shut down. And I look up in the press box. I'm sitting behind a home plate at the Kingdom. I look up and Alex Rodriguez is in the front row of the press box. And it was turning around with their cameras, taking pictures of A-Rod sitting in the press box. Nobody's paying attention to the game because the M stunk. All they wanted to do was get a photo of Alex Rodriguez sitting in the press box, eating a hot dog, chewing on some licorice, eating some popcorn, drinking a beer, whatever he was doing back then. He was like 12 years old. So I'm sure there was hype. I know there was hype. There was hype for Junior. There was hype for a bunch of these guys. But when you add the element of social media, Jackson, the fact that everybody else is just as hyped up as you are adds to the hype. There was about a 4 or 5 hour window today when the Mariners announced, I think it may have been actually Hector Gomez was the first one to break the news this morning that Julio had made the opening day roster. People just lost their freaking minds. They went crazy. I'm telling you, man, it's out of control, and I love it. When was the last time we were this fired up for a young player, even Jared Kelnick?
I'm not sure there's ever been, at least in my Mariner lifetime, because I was a baby when A-Rod and Griffey, and I wasn't even born when Griffey came through. I mean, the interesting thing is, I think you're right about social media, because remember the night he had the inside the park home run, and he had the great throw? Twitter exploded. Very few times I've ever seen Mariners Twitter explode like it did at that inside the park home run.
Yep.
And I mean, I think, I apologize for my ignorance, but like way back when these spring training players and these moments were happening, how did you know that spring training moments were happening without
social media? You don't. I mean, there was not a lot of games on TV back then, obviously.
Yeah.
You didn't see video clips. The idea that Julio Rodriguez, for example, if this were 1987 or 1988, you know how you'd find out about that?
Oh.
You'd find out about that two ways. Either A, by calling the Seattle Times sports phone, which was a number that you could call to get scores repeated to you on an answering machine. Literally, they had a guy that would speak into a microphone, and he would record scores like every 5 or 10 minutes. There'd be a new update on the machine, and you'd call in, and you'd get scores. Or you would wait until the 11 o'clock news, And maybe Como or Cairo or somebody had a shooter down there, a photographer down there, who happened to get video of the inside the park home run. Or how about this for an idea? You would read the paper.
What?
The following morning.
What's a paper?
Well, the PI in the morning and the Times in the afternoon. And the Times used to be an AM paper and then became an afternoon paper, then went back to an AM paper when the PI went to hell in a handbucket. But those are the ways you would find out. But you would not be able to share it with other people on social media. And that is the difference, man. That's the absolute difference with this type of thing, is you can share it. You can sense other people going crazy just like you are. You can engage other fans. And we put the poll out today, and I think we should ask the board, by the way, if you want to put a text out.
Okay.
Is the Julio Rodriguez hype train out of control?
Update on the poll.
And the update, by the way, from earlier today, I just gave you two simple options, right? Julio Rodriguez hype. Two options. A, dial it down a bit, or B, crank it up. 2,000 votes in, 83% say crank it up. The hype train is not out of control, say 8 out of every 10 baseball fans in this town. And I think it's great. You know, look, I mean, we're not dumb enough to know that there's a chance this guy is never going to be able to live up to the hype. And I don't even know what the standards are. You know, we could take some texts on that. The Tullamore Dew text line, 49451. I asked Ian Furness and Kevin Shockey this. What are the standards for Julio Rodriguez? You know, I mean, like, let's say, for example, the guy has a 15-year career in Major League Baseball and makes a couple of All-Star games, but he plays 15 damn years. You know, by all accounts, that is an awesome career, unbelievable career in Major League Baseball. But I think if you ask Mariner fans right now, would you take that? They'd say, hell no, would I take that. I want more. I want multiple MVPs. I want a borderline Hall of Fame player. I want a 10-year All-Star. I want a stalwart in center field now for the next decade in Seattle. I want to see the next superstar. I want the next Edgar, the next A-Rod, the next Griffey. That's what I want. I don't want just a guy. I don't want Kyle Seager's career, for example, right? I want Ken Griffey Jr.'s career. Right. Well, just think about that for a second. What you're talking about wanting and looking for is a guy who a lot of people consider to be a top two or three center fielder of all time in the history of baseball, with guys like Willie Mays and frickin' Mickey Mantle. That's the kind of guy you're talking about. So on the surface, that sounds ridiculous, right? That sounds asinine. For anybody to sit here and say he's got to be a top 10 player of all time in his position, that's cockamamie to expect that from him. And maybe that's what people expect. I don't know. What I expect is a guy who's going to be a difference maker. Simply put, you know, right now the M's had him hitting sixth today, for example. Does he end up a cleanup hitter? Does he end up playing right field versus center back, you know, later on in his career? Does he turn into a DH? And he's a big guy. Ian and Shockey were talking about that, and they were asking for a comparison to Julio Rodriguez, and I don't know if there really is one in baseball. I mean, you're talking about a guy in Julio Rodriguez, guys, who's listed at 6'3", 230. DK Metcalf is 6'4", 235. Now, he may not be as ripped as DK. He may not be as yoked as DK, but from a frame perspective, from an outline perspective, if you were to put both these guys on the sidewalk and use some chalk and make an outline, that's the comp.
It's wild.
He looks like DK Metcalf playing in center field. Andre Dawson was 6'3", but he weighed 180 pounds. Adam Jones is 6'2", 215. Bernie Williams was 6'2", but was 195 pounds soaking wet. I don't know if there's ever been a player like this in the history of baseball at his size.
When you think about those cross-sport players, right? We joke, like, what happens if LeBron James could go play tight end in the NFL, right? Like, he joked about going to the Browns and doing that and how dominant he might be.
Right.
Think about DK Metcalf. What position could DK Metcalf do in other sports, right? Julio Rodriguez is in the same boat considering those exact numbers.
Right. Well, like Aaron Judge is basically Jimmy Graham. You know, that's how big he is. Obviously, he's a freaking monster. So, look, I don't really – you want to make comparisons. They're fun. It's part of being a fan. Go for it. You know, I just love the fact that we are sitting here opening up the radio show 3 days before the start of the Mariner season, and we are talking about a guy who the entire city is fired up to see play. You know, next Friday, going to the game, going to the opener, taking a buddy. First thing we talked about today, we're going to get to go see Julio play next Friday. I've never seen him play in person, right? And 99% of people in this town have never seen Julio Rodriguez play in person. I would say there's a large majority of fans, what, 70% of them that have never seen the guy play, period. how many people really watch spring training games, right? How many people even know what spring training games are on TV and what aren't? The majority of, you know, video that I've seen on Julio Rodriguez has been on YouTube and MLB.com and Twitter. That's what I've seen. So I cannot wait to watch this guy play in person. You know, Jackson and I talked last week about the debut of Jared Kelnick and Logan Gilbert that came on the same night against the Indians, and there was a palpable buzz around the stadium that night. How many folks are going to be running out to center field or getting to batting practice early just to watch this guy walk around and get photos and say they were there when Julio Rodriguez made his debut? And look, you know, maybe we're putting too much pressure on the kid, but I don't know if we are, right? I mean, we're all fired up, but what are the details on that? We're fired up. We're excited. Nobody's sitting here saying that Julio Rodriguez has to lead the Mariners in home runs as a rookie. Nobody is saying that Julio has to be a Gold Glove Award winner or an All-Star in year number one. Nobody is saying that Julio Rodriguez has to put this team on his back and carry them in 2022. I mean, leave that to the veterans. Leave that to Winker and Suarez and Haniger and Adam Frazier and, you know, Tom Murphy and, you know, guys like that. J.P. Crawford, Marco Gonzalez, Robbie Ray. I mean, I love what the M's have done with this guy, and I kind of liken it in some ways to what the Seahawks did with Russell Wilson when they brought him up as a rookie. They had the highest paid offensive line, which we can debate how good they were, but they were the highest paid. They had an unbelievable depth at defensive line. They had KJ and Bobby and the Legion of Boom and Marshawn frickin' Lynch and Baldwin and Golden Tate and Sidney Rice and Zach Miller. They didn't need Russell Wilson to do everything on that baseball, on that football team. And they don't need Julio to do everything on this team either. I would feel much more nervous about this, Jackson,
yeah,
if this team was terrible, had a bunch of nobodies, and they were relying on Julio to hit third or clean up in this lineup and carry this baseball team. But that's not what's going on. So I want to give DePoto and the Mariner front office just a little bit of a kudo for the timing. And I don't know if they planned this or not, but the way it turned out, they don't need Julio to carry everything because they have a pretty good team around.
And speaking of Julio Rodriguez, I've just confirmed that he will be on our show tomorrow in the first hour. We will have it. Julio Rodriguez on the show. And that'll be exciting to hear from the kid because the pressure isn't on him. The pressure isn't on really anybody, because when Dustin Ackley came through, there was so much pressure on him. You're the number two pick. You got to hit because you've hit everywhere you've been. You got to hit here. And he obviously fell with the pressure. There's not that much pressure at all on any one player on this team.
Well, I just think the pressure is on the Mariners to justify some of the hype that they've fed into. I mean, look at their social media accounts, right? They're not hiding from this. They're making all these graphics and they're pumping the whole thing up. Yeah. I mean, the last time a rookie made the opening day roster, I don't remember this kind of a reaction by the Mariners social media team. And I think it's justified. I think it's great. Look, I mean, it's time that people get excited again about baseball in this town. It's time that people get fired up. It's time that people understand, and if you don't, you will, what this town can be like when this baseball team wins. I am so sick and tired of having to explain to people what Seattle is like when the Mariners are dominant. It's been so freaking long that people who were there, people who witnessed it, people who lived it, don't even remember what it was like 20 freaking years ago. They call this a football town. I've said it over and over again. Bull crap. This is a baseball town. You think I'm lying? Wait until August when this team is 15 games on first place. They have the best record in baseball, and we're talking about the World Series. You're not going to believe it, Jackson.
Oh,
you're
going to
lose your freaking mind.
Please.
You're going to lose your mind because you got no idea what it feels like. We'll get a break. We'll get some thoughts on this on the text line 49451, the Tullamore Dew text line for 345. We'll get a quick detour. Daniel Jeremiah from the NFL Network. I also saw on Twitter today a lot of people talking about DK Metcalf getting traded. Dove Kleinman, right?
Yeah.
Had a tweet yesterday. Apparently Cowherd said something about it. So what is Daniel Jeremiah hearing? We'll talk some draft with him. He's with us every Monday, courtesy of TroyWins.com. He's a former NFL executive. Would he consider trading DK Metcalf? And is he buying any of the smoke? Next on Sports Radio 93.3 KJR-FM.
Coming to you live from our Elliott Avenue studios of Sports Radio 93.3 KJR-FM. It's our weekly conversation about all things NFL Draft with the NFL Network's top NFL draft analyst, Daniel Jeremiah. Brought to you by the expert in sports handicapping, Troy Wins. Want the inside information on the best games with the best information? Then Troy Wins at TroyWins.com is your guy. Now with Softy and Dick, here's Daniel Jeremiah.
All right, boys and girls, getting ready for the national championship game. Pre-game 4:30 tip-off for round 6. Kansas and the scrapping, fighting 8-seed Carolina Tar Heels, courtesy of Westwood One. But before we get to all that, our weekly visit, courtesy of TroyWins.com, with the only guy that we trust when it comes to draft knowledge around the National Football League. There's a lot of pretenders out there. You want the real deal, you go straight to Daniel Jeremiah on his Twitter account, at Move the Sticks, and he's with us every week, courtesy of TroyWins.com. How are you, pal?
I'm doing great. What's going on?
Well, lots of stuff to talk about, dude, and I want to get your thoughts on the Hawks and the draft coming up here in a couple weeks. And you tweeted out today that there's 20 edge rushers that you like in this draft. So the Hawks got to get their hands on one of those guys for sure. But we got a deal that literally just came down in the last couple hours. The Eagles have traded 16, 19, and 194 to the Saints in exchange for number 18, 101, 237, a 23 first rounder, and a 24 second rounder. What are the freaking Eagles and Saints up to, pal? Talk to me.
Well, the Eagles thing makes sense because, you know, they want to get a lottery ticket in next year. It gives them another year to kind of evaluate Jalen Hurts, see what they have in him. They didn't want to execute all three first round picks this year. So that gives them more draft capital next year. They actually picked up a 2 in 2024 as well. So, if the quarterback situation is not firmed up after this year, next year they're loaded with ammunition to either stick and pick one, move up for one, or as we've seen, you can package these picks to go get a veteran. So I totally understand it from the Eagles standpoint. I'm clueless trying to figure out what the Saints are trying to accomplish here. There's got to be another move that's coming. But when you just look at the trade chart, they have enough points now with 16 and 19. If they wanted to go all the way up into the top 5 in this draft, they could. So, you know, inside the division, you've got the Carolina Panthers who are in the market for a quarterback. Both those teams trying to find their long-term guy. So, you know, shoot, maybe this is the first of two trades. Maybe they're going to try and go all the way up and get a quarterback. I just know historically when you start trading future ones and twos, usually is the quarterback involved at some point in time.
Well, Daniel Jeremiah with us at Move the Sticks on Twitter every week, courtesy of TroyWins.com. Usually he'll join us at 5, but we're off early for the Kansas-Carolina game at 6 p.m. tonight. I was asked on a different show if there's a quarterback I really like in this draft that I would take in the first round. And my answer right now is no. There's no real obvious, hey, we can grab that guy in the first round. We can replace Russell Wilson here in Seattle. What about you?
Yeah, I don't love any of them. I mean, my top guy at the position is Kenny Pickett. He's my 24th overall player. So it's one thing to stick and pick one of these guys, you know, and the teams, I can get behind that, I guess, but you know, the challenge with what we saw with the Saints, man, to part with a bunch of assets to go up for one of these quarterbacks, I really don't see it. But, look, using the eye of the beholder, you get around these guys and you fall in love with one of them, love makes you do crazy things, Sofi.
Yeah, no kidding, man. Trade DK Metcalf because you think you're in love with a bunch of young guys that aren't making any money. I mean, there's all kinds of rumors floating around there that maybe the Hawks are in the market to talk to somebody about trading their franchise wide receiver. What's your thought on that?
Well, if you look at the trades for the two wideouts that we had with Tyreek Hill and Davante Adams, and you just kind of, you know, take all the different picks that were involved, when you add it up, the average for each of those trades is for like the 13th overall pick. So if you're the Jets and you have the 10th overall pick, shoot, I would definitely be calling Seattle on that one, but you know, everything I've been told is he's not going anywhere. So you would know better than me up there if maybe from their timeline they think they're a ways off.
Yeah.
But if this is a long rebuild, why in the world would Pete Carroll want to sign up for that at 70, years old. I just don't understand that one.
Yeah, because Pete Carroll thinks he's 45. That's why.
He does. He's in the shape of a 44-year-old. I can say that as a 44-year-old.
Yeah, there's no doubt. But just that idea, though, on the surface, is there logic behind that? That, hey, if this is going to be a couple, 2-3 year rebuild, is this the right time? And maybe it is the right time, because nothing wrong with having great players on your team, by the way, especially if you draft a young quarterback. Is this the right time in the Seahawks franchise history where they should be dropping $25-30 million on a wide receiver?
No, I get your point. I mean, that's one thing we've learned this offseason is that the cost of these wideouts in terms of, you know, the trade capital you have to put together, and then actually the finances to pay these guys on their second contracts. And we just saw, you know, those guys get paid at age 28, 29 seasons. And I think DK is what, 24, 25 years old. So he's going to eclipse those numbers when that time comes. So,
yeah.
I can understand from a timing standpoint of saying his window doesn't really fit with the team window. But, man, it's hard for me to get around trading good, young, controllable players like that.
Daniel Jeremiah again with us every Monday, courtesy of TroyWins.com. Normally would be with us at 5, but we're off early tonight for the national championship game. We talked a lot last week about Sauce Gardner, and I believe your quote was, if he's there at number 9, it would take you like 10 seconds to get your pick turned in if you're the Hawks. What about Evan Neal? 6'7", 340 and change out of Alabama. Dwayne Brown's like 50 years old. He's not signed as of right now. As of this second, their tackles are Stone Forsythe and Jake Curran. Does Evan Neal look like a guy at number 9 that could be your next franchise left tackle?
No, I think so. I mean, he's my 7th overall player. He can play on either side. He's played on either side. Shoot, if you wanted to, you could kick him inside. He's played some guard as well. So, you know, just at his size, the way he moves, there's some balance stuff he can clean up and pass pro, but he's definitely better than anything on campus in Seattle right now. I can tell you that much.
And you know what, Daniel? I don't think the Hawks are going to trade DK, but let's just live in a world for a second where they do trade DK and they're on the clock at number 9, and you got a guy like Chris Olave and a guy like Drake London at a USC. Between those two wide receivers, is there one there that you would feel more comfortable grabbing as a cheap replacement for DK Metcalf?
Yeah, I would take London between those two. If you're going to put Garrett Wilson in the mix, I actually would take Garrett Wilson over both those guys. But, you know, if you're going to lose DK Metcalf and lose some of that size, you're going to get that size right back with Drake London. He's not going to be nearly as explosive,
but
he's a more complete route runner. You can do different things with him. He can play in the slot even and give you some of that. So, I see what you're saying earlier, too. When you're going to have to pay this guy $25 million plus, and you could – make a trade and get somebody like Drake London, who might not be the same player, but man, you're going to have a good solid player for a heck of a lot less money for the next 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just, you know, put your old front office cap on, right? I mean, you know the Seahawks offensive line and you know the state of their defensive line. They don't have much on the line of scrimmage right now. Would you rather take that money and the draft capital and try and rebuild at the line of scrimmage or hand it over to DK Metcalf?
Yeah, you're making a compelling case. You ought to open up a law firm here, Stoffy. You're making a strong, compelling argument. I think one of the key things in any team building, you know, situation, whatever sport you're in, is understanding the window and kind of build for it. I mean, I'm a Padre fan, and this is their they've decided this is their window, so they cranked up their payroll and they've kind of gone for it here, been aggressive. And if you're the Seahawks right now, that they're out of their window, so. You know, what gives you the best chance to have a great team 2 to 3 years down the road? That's got to be in your decision-making process.
Hey, by the way, you mentioned Ty France last week. Wait until DJ, you get a load of Matt Brash, who's the number 5 guy in the M's rotation, right? He's starting.
Is he a starter?
Yeah, he won the 5 spot. How about that? So, you know what?
I think he was our player to be named later that we just threw into that trade.
Correct. In the Taylor Williams deal, he was the PTBNL. So I think when Matt Brash starts, I may have to call you and make sure you're not hanging around any sharp objects or anything. But
I appreciate you. The good news is Me, along with the rest of America, will not be watching any Mariners games. So,
it's
not going to be a big deal.
Look at you, just taking shots. Down. All right. Well, Daniel Jeremiah with us. I was intrigued this morning. You tweeted out that there's 20 edge rushers in this draft that you like. So it's a good year for the Hawks to need pass rush and a good year for them to have five picks in the top 109. Talk to me about some maybe later round, maybe even second or third day edge rushers that you like.
Yeah, that's a good group. I think when you start looking at the second day guys, I think Ebba Cady from Penn State probably going to end up going in the first round probably in the 20s. But once you get out of the first round, a guy like Nick Benito from Oklahoma, who's really, really explosive and can bend, he's a good one. You know, Ojabo's a wild card. I think he probably falls in the second round after popping his Achilles at the Michigan Pro Day. D'Angelo Malone from Kentucky is a little bit undersized, but's got a ton of juice. Off the edge, you got Josh Pascal from Kentucky, who's got some inside-outside flexibility there. So there's an endless number of these guys. You can find them.
Kayvon Thibodeau, I saw where he said it's crazy to think that he's not the best player in this draft. Now, maybe that's just him being cocky, a little arrogant, pumping himself up, whatever. Do you agree with that? That overall, Kayvon Thibodeau, regardless of position, is the best player in this draft?
Well, I've got him as my 10th player, so I guess that I could put crazy on my business card. I admire the confidence. Shoot, I'd want every one of these guys to think they're the best player in the draft. So I never have any issue with people believing in themselves. They should. But, for me, he's my 10th player, not my top player.
I got you. Well, we'll see what happens, man. I just love it when guys open up their mouths and we can spend the next 4 or 5 years seeing if they were right. All right, man. Hey, who do you like in the Carolina-Kansas game tonight, by the way?
Well, I mean, I got, you know, my partner and Bucky Brooks here on the podcast and on the path to the draft is a North Carolina guy.
Okay.
So I'm going to go with him. I'll go with his Tar Heels. But I'll be honest with you, I'm an Indiana basketball fan, so I haven't watched a whole lot of college hoops over the last few years.
Yeah, you know what? Try being a Washington Husky basketball fan. All right, pal? Cry me a river, for God's sakes. All right, man. Listen, great stuff. We'll talk next week, get back to 5 o'clock, and talk more draft, and I'm sure a ton of other news always comes out every day with the NFL. But, DJ, we appreciate this, and we'll talk in a week, buddy.
All right, sounds good, man. Take care.
You got it, man. Daniel Jeremiah from the NFL Network with us every week, courtesy of TroyWins.com. We got Kansas. We got Carolina. Pregame coming up 4:30 right here on Sports Radio 93.3 KJR-FM.
We're changing the way you listen. Switch the stream from 950 KJR to the 93.3 stream on the iHeartRadio app. Now back to Softy and Dick.
All right, Softy and Dick without Dick. He's out the rest of the week. A little baseball roundtable with the fellows tomorrow at 5 o'clock, brought to you in part by our friends at Taco Time. Wednesday cracking, Thursday cracking, Friday got no idea. So we got a lot going on this week. Julio Rodriguez will join us tomorrow in the 3 p.m. hour on the radio program, so stay tuned for that. We actually asked the Pit of Stupidity Board.
Pit of Stupidity.
To weigh in on whether or not the Julio Rodriguez hype train was out of control, and we already have a result on their vote process. Yep. The white smoke has appeared from the Pit of Stupidity headquarters, and their decision is what, Jackson Feld?
By a vote of 9-0, No, the hype train is not out of control.
Pit of Stupidity.
Unanimous result from the POS editorial board. Keep it up. Keep going with the Julio Rodriguez hype train. How fast do locomotives typically go in this country?
Oh, gosh.
You have any idea?
Oh, well, remember Back to the Future had the thing where it had to get special up to 88 miles an hour. So
yeah, well, that was the DeLorean,
yeah,
not
right.
A locomotive.
Maybe so, like 60, maybe?
Yeah, how fast? How fast do locomotives go in America? I'm not talking about like the bullet trains
right.
Over in Europe. 65, 70 miles an hour.
That's
close. So why don't you crank it up to 150? Why not? Just throw some little HGH on that bad boy, little fish paralyzer, and let's just go bananas. So the Pit of Stupidity board says, no, the Julio Rodriguez hype train is not out of control. I'll tell you what might be out of control is the DK Metcalf trade conversation.
Yes.
We talked about that with Daniel Jeremiah in the last segment. He says he's hearing that the Seahawks are closer to getting something done or would like to get something done versus trading DK Metcalf. And then you saw what DK himself said today on Twitter. Did you catch that?
I did, yes.
There was a story that came out that the Seahawks were taking calls, or somebody was talking to the Seahawks about trading for DK Metcalf, to which DK Metcalf addressed that rumor himself on Twitter and said, have not heard anything per me, on his Twitter account 4 hours ago. So I guess the question is this. Does that make you feel any different about it? Because would DK Metcalf be in the know if the Seahawks are actually talking to teams about trading him? Would he be in the conversation? Would his agent be in the conversation? And I would actually think that they would be, Jackson, and here's why. Because if I'm making a move for DK Metcalf with 1 year left on his contract, I'm not trading for him unless I can lock him up to a long-term deal. So I'm talking to his agent. I'm talking to his representatives. And if I have to talk to him and the Hawks will allow me to do that, I'm talking to him. So in this case, I would think if there are a lot of phone calls and there are legitimate conversations being had regarding DK Metcalf's future, I think there's a pretty good chance that DK would know about it.
I 100% agree, and that's kind of the logical way of looking at it. But let's just throw the other way. Let's say that DK isn't involved in these conversations, or maybe his agent hasn't. His agent isn't involving him for some weird reason, right?
Yeah, it would never happen like that.
It never would. But let's just throw out the hypothetical, right? The fact that DK is so adamantly tweeting about staying in Seattle, wanting to be in Seattle, that it's, you know, all these reports are ridiculous and all these rumors are just nonsense. The fact that he is going as far as posting all of these tweets about that, it does change things. I love to see that because it's a guy who seemingly, from everything that we're reading, is all in on the Seahawks.
Well, you would think. I mean, I would hope that he'd be all in wherever he is, right? I mean, I think most players, if they're not pissed off and angry and wanting the hell out of town like Russell Wilson did, and even Russell Wilson didn't go that far in displaying his displeasure. I mean, every now and then he would give you a little bit of a window and maybe keep the door open a little bit about taking off, but you know, most guys will embrace, their current situation. And if they go somewhere else, they'll give you a line like, well, it's good to be wanted, right? Or whatever, something like that. So, I don't know. I mean, I just think this. I would hope that people aren't dismissing all this as media mumbo jumbo the way they did the Russell Wilson thing. You know, these guys that do this for a living, like the Rappaports and the Schefters and the Pelliceros, they're not throwing this stuff out because they're reading it off a bathroom wall at a gas station or making it up in their brain. They're throwing it out because they're hearing legitimate people that would be able to influence things like this, telling them that something like this is possible. So I think it is a conversation. I think the Seahawks are taking calls on DK Metcalf. I think they are considering trading DK Metcalf. Now, look, I would also be considering, sleeping under a bridge for the right amount of money. I would also consider walking here from here to T-Mobile Park completely naked for the right amount of money. There's a lot of things I would consider doing for the right price. Doesn't mean it's going to happen, obviously, but I think the idea that this is all hogwash and nonsense is nonsense itself. Exactly why? Because of what I said to Daniel Jeremiah in the last segment. You have a football team that needs to rebuild its offensive line, a football team that needs to rebuild its defensive line. You guys know you cannot win a championship. You cannot contend for a championship unless you are solid on the line of scrimmage, and the Hawks are not that right now at all. Is this the point in time in their franchise history where they should be spending $25 million on a wide receiver? I think a wide receiver is a toy. It's an accessory. I've always thought that, right? I mean, you go to a car dealership, you buy a car, and then you go to Car Toys, and you get a DVD player installed. Mm. That's what DK Metcalf is on a bad football team. Now, on a really good football team, he could be the difference between making a Super Bowl and not. On a really good football team, he could be the difference between winning a division title and not winning a division title. But I guess I would ask people out there, and again, if you sign DK Metcalf, which I have no problem doing, by the way, trust me. I mean, either way, I think you win. Either A, you trade him for a haul, or B, you get maybe a top five wide receiver in the NFL to stay in Seattle for a long damn time. But imagine this football team this year with DK Metcalf versus this football team this year without DK Metcalf. What's the difference in wins? Negligible at best.
5-7.
So he's a two-game difference?
Maybe three games?
I don't think he's even that much. I got to be honest with you. I could see this team going 5-12 with DK. I could see him going 5-12 without DK Metcalf. I mean, I could be wrong, but that's just my immediate gut says that he's not going to make that big of a difference on this team. Now, again, the difference in that extra win in the playoffs or that extra win in week 18 and that win being the difference between the one seed and the two seed or a two seed and a three seed or a division championship and a wild card, absolutely can make that difference. I just don't think this team is in a position right now to be that close to that kind of a prize. So if you're signing him, you are absolutely signing him because you believe in the next 2 to 3 years you can field a team around him. You can get him the protection. You can get him the quarterback that can get him the football. And I have also asked this question many, many times on the air, and I asked it to Millen last week. As long as Pete Carroll's DK Metcalf's head coach, is he ever going to honestly realize his potential? 356. Mike DeCourcy will join us in a matter of minutes right before pregame of Carolina and Kansas for the national title. Courtesy of Westwood One, pregame 4:30 right here on Sports Radio 93.3 KJR FM.
Your Sports Radio KJR 950 AM and 93.3 FM Sports Headlines.
All right, boys and girls, headlines on Safi and Dick. Without Dick, of course, are brought to you by our friends at Buddy's Goodies and Glass. It's always 420 at Buddy's, baby.
Does it make any sense?
It does not.
Well, some news announced by UW. They have landed a transfer running back from Virginia. Wayne Taulapapa is a senior. 2021 team captain with Virginia, 5'9", 200 pounds, has run for almost 1,200 yards and 19 touchdowns in 4 seasons at Virginia. Just over 300 yards and a couple of touchdowns last year in a reserve role for the Cavaliers. He is now a Husky. Mariners open up in Minnesota on Thursday. In the news of the day, Julio Rodriguez has made the opening day roster and has become the quickest player ever to make the Hall of Fame. Mariners also will keep 3 catchers on the opening day roster, Luis Torrens, Kyle Riley, and Tom Murphy. April 15th is Jackie Robinson Day. Next Friday, opening day at T-Mobile Park. All players around baseball, as tradition, will wear number 42, but a twist this year. All players will also be wearing Dodger blue uniforms. The national championship, Kansas and North Carolina, coming up. Pregame 4:30, tip-off right after 6 p.m. right here on 93.3 KJR-FM. And a big trade in the NFL, the Saints and Eagles getting together. New Orleans gets 2 first-rounders from Philadelphia, 16 and 19 overall, plus a 22 sixth-round pick from Philadelphia in exchange for the Saints' number 18 pick in the first round this year, a 2023 first-rounder, and a bevy of picks, including a second-round draft pick in 2024. More news in the NFL. Patriots grabbing wide receiver Devontae Paca and a 5th-rounder from Miami for a 2023 third-round pick. And Frank Gore, number 3 all-time leading rusher in the history of the NFL, said yesterday he plans to sign a 1-day deal with the Niners and then retire as a member of the San Francisco 49er football team. Mike DeCourcy will join us in a matter of minutes here. He is in New Orleans for the Final Four. North Carolina against Kansas for the national championship. If North Carolina wins this thing, they will become the lowest seed ever, along with Villanova. They will tie Villanova as the lowest seed ever to win a national championship. But something about this does not feel very Cinderella-ish compared to where Villanova was in 85. I mean, it's North Carolina, right? They didn't play that great during the regular season, but it's still North Carolina.
And there's got to be an emotional letdown, right? There's got to be
after
that. For North Carolina. Oh, yeah, there's got to be a letdown.
They're playing for the title, though, man. I mean, how do you not get
but Saturday was
for that?
So intense.
Well, of course it was, but you're playing for a damn national championship. I'm not laughing at you.
But look at Gonzaga last year.
I get it. But I think part of what happened at Gonzaga, and I've said this before, is I think the pressure of going undefeated got to them. North Carolina is not dealing with any of that. If anything, North Carolina should feel like there's no pressure on them. They're not supposed to be here. Duke was supposed to be here. Gonzaga was supposed to be here. Right. Arizona was supposed to be here. Carolina was an 8 seed. And nobody on Selection Sunday was bitching and moaning about how underseeded the Tar Heels were. So if you're Hubert Davis, if anything, you say, hey, man, we've already won. This has already been a phenomenal basketball season. We've already done wonders for recruiting. I'm a first-year head coach. A lot of people wondered if I was the right guy to replace Roy Williams. Look at me now.
Yeah. Oh,
I got
gosh.
You in the national title game and 40 minutes away from a freaking championship. So I think it's the exact opposite. And I always laugh when people say things like that, though, because here's what they have to lose. They have a national damn title to lose. So I don't know what Hubert Davis's angle will be on this game tonight against Kansas. I just know this. And I saw George Karl tweet this out, that today is actually, according to George, and knowing him, who knows, maybe he had too many whiskeys and he's, you know, got the wrong number in his brain. Tonight, if North Carolina wins, according to George Karl, will be win number 2,323. That is 23-23.
Oh, wow.
That is Michael Jordan's number if they win this game tonight against Kansas. So we got the game for you. Mike DeCourcy again joining us in a few seconds. Julio Rodriguez, by the way, going to join us on the radio show tomorrow. John Wilner on the radio show tomorrow. And we're getting the band together at 5 p.m. We had to bribe him with taco time and beer. 5 o'clock tomorrow. Puckett, Furness, I believe Chuck, and maybe even Buck. Although Buck is the one guy that hasn't responded at all to any of these emails. Did they not get email in North Bend on the river?
See, that's the thing. I think it's just a little bit too far of a drive for Bucky that he's at twice in one day.
I mean, you're looking at a guy that used to do that all the time on the morning show. It would come in here from Mill Creek, so cry me a freaking river. But we got Kansas, we got Villanova. My gut, and I want to ask Mike about this, if he's a gambling man, Kansas is only given 4. I thought the line would be closer to 6.5 or 7 in this game tonight. And if I'm a gambling man, I'm betting the whole damn thing on the Jayhawks. Mike DeCourcy joining us right now.
It's time for the latest on the madness of March. Here's Hall of Fame college basketball writer for the Sporting News and Fox Sports lead bracketologist, Mike DeCourcy. Brought to you by Northwest Handling Systems. From forklifts to pallet racks, conveyors to loading dock equipment, we sell, rent, and service all your warehousing needs. Request a quote today at nwhs.com or give us a call at 425-255-0500. Now with Mike DeCourcy, here's Softy and Dick.
Yeah, I was just thinking, do we find it coincidental that Dick Fain takes this week off where he can just purely focus on the national championship game, the Masters on Thursday, opening day this week? It's kind of a veteran move by him, to be honest with you. But speaking of veterans, man, here courtesy of our friends at Northwest Handling Systems, every Monday, Fox Sports lead bracketologist, Sporting News. He is one of the biggest voices in college basketball media. We are thrilled, hashtag blessed, as the kids say on Twitter, to have him with us every Monday, our friend Mike DeCourcy. Mike, how are you, pal?
I am very well, Softy. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm jealous of you being in New Orleans. I frankly think the Final Four and the Super Bowl should be in New Orleans every single year. It's a phenomenal spot for this tournament. But you also said last week that you thought that Duke and North Carolina was the best rivalry in all of sports. And I wonder, are the Carolina fans ever going to let the Duke fans off the hook for what they did to Coach K and that program on Saturday?
Of course not. They're going to live with that forever. And, you know, and the thing about that rivalry is because it's the best, you never get much real momentum. Like, you don't get, like, 5 in a row very often. I mean, you have to be unbelievable to do that. So you don't ever really get to brag for long in the Duke-Carolina rivalry. So when you've got a chip like that, they only met in the tournament once. It was in the Final Four. It was Coach K's last game. They're going to be able to play that one forever. The odds of Duke ever getting one like that, unless they can get on a roll, like I mentioned, if they, the odds of them ever really shutting them up are pretty slim.
Well, this game tonight, man, I got to be honest with you, Mike, a little bit of the air was taken out of the balloon. I was looking forward to seeing Duke play Kansas tonight, but it's going to be a great game regardless. And first of all, I wonder, just from a historical perspective, I'm racking my brain. I can't think of another national championship game where both coaches in the game succeeded the same guy. Hubert Davis and Bill Self both succeeding Roy Williams at Kansas and at North Carolina. This has got to be historical from that regard, huh?
Yeah, it's pretty wild that Roy has that distinction. And remember, 2008, when Kansas played Carolina in the Final Four, in the semifinals, I believe Memphis, UCLA went first that night, and then Kansas and Carolina came on after, and Carolina just smoked Kansas that night. Excuse me, the opposite. Kansas smoked Carolina, and it was a very good Carolina team that came back the next year and dominated the season. But that night, I can't really understand it, but I mean, it was a very good Kansas team, but they just blew them off the floor. And so then two nights later, Roy came to the Final Four wearing this Jayhawk, big Jayhawk sticker on whatever golf shirt he had. And it was, you know, it's one of those kind of things that even before there was a meme, there was a meme. That was a big thing. And so, of course, now people are saying that he should dress like in one of those, you know, do you ever see a parent that has a kid on both teams? So they wear these half jerseys where it's one side and the other. And then so people are saying that Roy should show up at tonight's game wearing a half and half. Let me tell you, I know Roy, not his best friend or whatever, but I know him. And I know that like he could never choose anybody over Carolina. This is where his kids went to school. He met his wife there. He went there. He worked there to start. He worked there to finish. And there's no doubt who he's going to be rooting for tonight.
No, there's no question. I mean, look, either way, the guy can claim something, if Kansas ends up winning the national championship. But I think you're right. There's no question he's going all UNC. And the last time we saw Armando Bacot, he's walking off the floor. He comes back. He finishes the game. Ends up having a huge night. Is that ankle at all going to be a problem tonight? And does David McCormick maybe and Bill Self test that from the jump?
You know, I think the ankle could be an issue, but I don't think that they'll change their game plan to deal with that. I think they'll be happy if he's limited. Not obviously rooting for the kid to be in pain, but if it makes their job easier, I'm sure they'll take it is what I'm saying. Maybe happy is the wrong word. But they'll certainly accept whatever advantage comes to them if Armando is limited. But I was in his press conference yesterday for 20 minutes, what we call the breakouts, where every player goes to an individual room at the Final Four. And I was in with him. And first of all, he is delightful. What a great young man. One of the best sessions I've ever seen in one of those Final Four breakouts. Mm. And secondly, he didn't, you know, he was getting stim on his ankle while he was sitting there, and it's being treated very aggressively. He didn't seem to be worried about it. I'm sure that it could come up on him, but he didn't seem to be worried about it going in.
Well, it's funny, Mike, if you look at UNC as an 8 seed and you see all this stuff, all these factoids all over Twitter, if Carolina wins the national championship, they'll tie Villanova and Raleigh-Massimino for the lowest seed ever to win a national championship. And something doesn't strike me as those two teams being anywhere near similar as far as the Cinderella factor. I mean, they're both 8 seeds, but I don't know. If Carolina wins this tonight, how much of a real Cinderella factor for you is there?
Well, yeah, Softy, I think part of it is because they're Carolina, and that. But the hidden story about the 85 Villanova team, they had two first-round picks on their team. Mm-hmm. They had Harold Presley was a first-round pick. I think he went in the 20s. I think it was Sacramento that took him. And Ed Pinckney was a top 10 pick.
Yeah,
I mean, it was, you know, they just weren't good in the regular season, and that's kind of Carolina's story this year. You know, I got yelled at on Twitter. They were underseeded. Okay, like, all right. Well, here's the thing: they lost to Pitt, which finished 13th in their league, and never won another game. They lost to Miami by like 29. They lost to Wake by 20 plus. They lost to Kentucky by 20 plus. They lost to Duke by 20. Are we supposed to just forget all that because they've got some good players and their name's Carolina?
Yeah.
Or do the games actually count?
I well, first of all, if you're getting yelled at on Twitter, I just call that a Monday, by the way, Mike, number one. And then, then second of all, I don't remember when the seedings came out, and maybe you heard more than me, a lot of people on Selection Sunday complaining about Carolina being an 8 seed.
No. And I will tell you that as I was doing the brackets, there were two teams that I knew didn't look like 8 seeds, like in the sense of you really don't want to put them in with a one if you don't have to. It's kind of unfair to the one. And that was Carolina and Memphis. And while I'm doing the brackets, I'm always kind of dancing around that, trying to keep them out of that game. You know, if they could jump over the bridge, so to speak, out of the 8-9 game into the 7, okay, I think that's what the committee would want to do. If they weren't quite there, and like if Carolina lost their first ACC tournament game, you know, they could be back at 10 or 11, and the committee would be happy with that because it wouldn't mess with their ones. But when you got to the end of it, there was just nowhere. That's what they were. That's where they belong. They had to be in 8-9 games, even though I knew, and I'm sure the committee knew when they did it, this could be a problem for whoever's the one.
Yeah.
And ultimately, you know, Memphis, Gonzaga had to sweat bullets to get through against Memphis because they were so talented. And now at least more together than they had been parts of the year. And then Kentucky, very talented, not elite talent, not a lot of lottery picks or whatever, but still very, very good talent. Several five-star guys and just weren't good in a lot of the regular season. But now, obviously, with the Duke win on the road, a decent ACC tournament performance, better. So I'm sure they didn't want to put them there, but they had zero choice.
I was, and again, Mike DeCourcy with us. He's in New Orleans getting ready for the national championship game. You'll hear it live, of course, right here at 6 p.m. on 93.3 KJR FM. I was a bit surprised at the line in this game. Kansas only given 4. If you were a betting man, and maybe you are, maybe you're not, do you feel comfortable giving that 4 points and Kansas wins it going away, or do you see Carolina giving these guys fits and it coming down to the last minute or maybe the last couple of seconds?
You know, what I've seen from Carolina has been the latter. Duke's a very good team and couldn't chase. You know, they had Carolina down 7. I thought, okay, this might be it. This is where they get the double digits and then Carolina's fighting it the rest of the night. They got up 7 and Carolina scored the next 13 points. So no, that wasn't going to happen. UCLA's probably done the best defensive job in this tournament against them. They took away everything but Love's 25 footers. I mean, that's it. You're going to win or lose on 25 footers. Most teams are going to say, go ahead. And UCLA didn't completely yield those. They were mostly challenged, but he was making them anyway.
Yeah.
So I think that you have to constrict the lane better than Duke did. Duke's not a great defensive team. They are good. Kansas is a great defensive team. That's where their advantage is. They have to completely constrict the lane without sacrificing the open threes from Manek. And with Love getting some threes open, that's going to happen, but mostly challenged. I think you can win if you can pull that off.
Well, who do you like? If I'm going to jump in the car and run down to the Emerald Queen Casino on the way home and make a wager before this game, who does Mike DeCourcy like to win this whole thing, and what's your final score?
Yeah, I think Kansas will win. I don't see them, you know, see, the problem with me in betting is that, you know, I think that this team's going to win and I think it's going to be reasonably close, but then they're the bad beat quotient, like they're winning by the less than the number.
Right.
And then all of a sudden Carolina starts to foul at the end or whatever, that kind of thing. So that's one of the reasons why I don't gamble on games. I'll throw a futures bet down every now and then. Those are fun. But not a big in-game gambler, because I know, like, I might have a feeling that Kansas is going to win, which I think they will. And
yeah,
I think it's going to be reasonably close. But do they stay under the number or go over it? That's hard for me to say. I don't expect them to dominate the game. After what Carolina's done, it just seems hard to believe that they would come up here after what they did on Saturday and just completely go flat. I think they'll be good. I just don't think they'll be quite good enough.
Got it. Well, what you're saying without saying it is take Kansas in the money line then, just to win
there
outright tonight against
yes.
Carolina. Never mind the spread and all that mumbo jumbo. Just take the Jayhawks to win the damn thing flat out. Hey, Mike, before you go, we started with Duke and Carolina. I was a little bit surprised, and maybe I should not be surprised, at the amount of people that were taking joy in Duke losing on Saturday and Coach K getting beat by Carolina in his final game. There's some animosity out there for Mike Krzyzewski. I don't feel that really for him. Maybe it's because we're 2,000 miles away, but what do you make of that angle on Coach K losing on Saturday?
Yeah, I don't really understand it. I mean, he's been so great for so long, but it's not like the Wooden thing where for 10 years he vacuumed up every championship. But, you know, Mike's been great, but he's had, no, he hadn't been to the Final Four since 15. He hadn't won the ACC regular season since 06. So it's not like he's been a fun spoiler.
Yeah.
Not sure. I guess people, you know, I don't know, people get jealous or whatever. But, you know, he's been a great, know, first of all, he gave all of those people, presumably, gold medals in three consecutive Olympics after the program had completely cratered in the early 2000s. He and Jerry Colangelo put the program back together. Now, when I say that, I understand LeBron and Kobe and KD and all of them are, you know, the biggest reasons. But if it weren't for them, LeBron and KD and Kobe wouldn't have played because that's the way it had been. So that's why one of the reasons I can't understand it. And two, like I said, although he had been great for a very long time, he hadn't made it so that it was a foregone conclusion at any point. And so I don't understand that level of it. I was disappointed in the Kansas fans who were behind the Duke bench instead of giving him the standing ovation that he deserved walking off. Kind of some people just ignored it, which is fine. Others were giving the sarcastic wave, which I thought was out of line. Carolina fans, they were just too busy celebrating. They're right because they just won. And then the Duke fans were across the court, and so they couldn't be any solace to Kay. It was too far.
Unreal, man. It's madness. It's the madness of March, and I love it. Well, the road ends tonight at 6 p.m. Mike, enjoy the game. Enjoy New Orleans. Enjoy Bourbon Street. Have fun tonight, and we will wrap the whole thing up in a week from now. Appreciate this, pal.
Thanks very much. We'll look forward to next week.
You bet, man. Mike DeCourcy, Fox Sports, the sporting news. That's it for us. Westwood One's pregame show, Kansas, North Carolina. Tip-off here on 6 for the national championship in Crystal Clear FM. Enjoy it right here on Sports Radio 93.3, KJR FM. Enjoy the game. We'll see you tomorrow at 3. Bye.